Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
Listening to the Windy City Queercast, show number 491. I'm Amy Matheny, and I'm excited about today's show because I love chatting and catching up with these gals, or girls. They're okay if I call them that. The Indigo Girls are on the show today, sitting down with Emily and talking with her about music and symphonies and food and just all the things that we love to chat about. And so excited that they're coming here to the beautiful Paramount Theater. So many great shows going on at the Paramount. And you are not going to want to miss them coming here in just a couple weeks, the first few days of November. So the Indigo Girls on the show today, you'll be hearing the music of the Indigo Girls, some music from their brand new CD, which I love, on today's show. Also something that I love and has become my guilty pleasure as we head into Halloween, I have been catching up on American Horror Story. And let me just say, because the new American Horror Story starts this week, which I will be watching because, you know, it's a mini series. So if you didn't watch last season, you could do that another time. But you can start watching it this week as the new American Horror Story Asylum is going to be its own season. Like it's a story from beginning to end. And I only have one episode left of season one and I can't watch it. I can't watch it at night when the lights are the only thing glowing in the world that it feels like, and it's dark outside. I can't watch it. I have to watch it when I take a break and eat lunch, or I have to watch it during the daytime with sun shining through my windows because it creeps me out. But I love it. It's a creepy in. It's no more creepy than The X-Files, which once I found that out, I could watch it. Certain episodes of The X-Files, you know the ones I'm talking about. But anyhow, because I'm not a fan of horror. I don't love all the scary movies that come out all the time. But I am enjoying this. The acting is superb. There's a great cast. Jessica Lange deserves an Emmy for the next 3 years based on last year's performance. So we'll just see. I mean, actually, people the 3 years before she got the Emmy this year should probably just give her their Emmy. It's that good. It's that good. It's that cray cray. I love it. So I don't know if you want to get in the Halloween mood. Hopefully you'll watch the new American Horror Story Asylum by openly gay producer Ryan Murphy, who brought us Glee and Nip Tuck. And now this crazy show. What else can I tell you, folks? I am excited. In our next show, Mitchell Fain are going to head to Kinky Boots, the big Harvey Fierstein, and Cyndi Lauper musical that's in town based on the film. And it's funny, you know, Cyndi's been popping up all over town and we've been covering her in Windy City Times and Night Spots and You know, she's super fun, and I love that she supports our causes so, so much. And so I'm excited. Mitchell and I are going to go to the opening of Kinky Boots, and we'll be back and tell you our thoughts. But she is just a great songwriter. She's an amazing singer. She's not in the musical, but she's an amazing singer. So I've heard the music's really good. I've heard it's really catchy. I know they've been here really hashing it out and hammering it out before they head to Broadway. But I'm so surprised by a lot of the gay people, even some of whom have gone to see the musical that I've spoken with, that have not seen the movie Kinky Boots. And it is such a great little film. Much in the same feel and vein of like a Billy Elliot, but I would say not that heavy a film. But I really love this movie, and I don't know, I haven't seen it in a long time. Maybe I need to revisit it, but I'm just shocked by more people that have not seen the movie. And I have seen the movie, and I like it, and I understand why you might want to make a musical out of it, because it's a cute little sleeper film and has a great message. So I don't know. Those of you who can't watch American Horror Story, maybe you want to rent or download the little Kinky Boots and check it out before you go see the musical. I love that these musicals are starting here in Chicago and then going to Broadway. A really great place to start theater is in Chicago and then let it go, you know, elsewhere. All right, folks, big show, GLBT News. Theater is heating up. Richard Knight Jr. with his review of the new Ben Affleck movie, which I am dying to see. Really, really am. Argo. They're saying Ben Affleck will be nominated for Best Director. What a guy, Ben Affleck, you know, like an Oscar for Good Will Hunting as a writer. And then now possibly as a director. And then he's had this acting career. And yet everybody kind of goes, Ben Affleck, he's not really that much of an artist. I don't know. That's my perception that people have of him. Like, nice guy, likes to talk politics. But, you know, it's kind of like, But the dude might have two Oscars here in about a year. So I don't know. I don't know that the rest of us cannot take Ben Affleck seriously ever again. All right, let's cut to the chase, folks. Indigo Girls on the show and much, much more.
Vancouver is home to Western Canada's largest LGBT population, and now you can enter for your chance to win the Lights, Camera, Attraction prize package to Vancouver, British Columbia. A safe and welcoming destination for diehard shoppers, avid outdoor thrill seekers, nightlife aficionados, and dedicated food lovers, Vancouver is a world-class city offering something for everyone. From sports pubs to drag shows, leather bars to dance clubs, lounges and restaurants, Vancouver's got it all. Plus, Vancouver Pride celebrations and the Vancouver Queer Film Festival in July and August, and Whistler's Winter Pride in February. Tourism Vancouver is pleased to offer you and a guest the chance to win a trip to Vancouver in 2013. For a chance to win the Lights, Camera, Attraction sweepstakes, visit tourismvancouver.com/lights by November 30th, 2012 to enter. That's tourismvancouver.com/lights.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Weekend News. The Department of Defense announced on October 3rd that three soldiers, including Sergeant Donna R. Johnson, were killed supporting Operation Enduring Freedom in Afghanistan. Army Staff Sergeant Donna R. Johnson gave the ultimate sacrifice to our nation in a suicide bomber attack while on patrol in Afghanistan on Monday, October 1st, 2012. Staff Sergeant Johnson is survived by her wife, Tracy Dice.
The National Center for Transgender Equality released a series of public service announcements outlining how transgender Americans can keep their right to vote this election day. The PSAs aim to educate and prepare transgender people to vote in their state. PSAs are available at votingwhiletrans.org.
In Missouri, teen Mercedes Ayers pled guilty to a hate crime months after she and her friend severely beat her lesbian neighbor. Ayers was charged with third-degree assault motivated by discrimination for physically attacking Gina Terry, 41, outside her Cape Girardeau home. Ayers will be sentenced next month.
In Washington State, Nordstrom has joined the growing list of companies backing marriage equality. Representatives for the Seattle-based upscale clothing chain announced they would back Washington State's pro-LGBT referendum 74. Nordstrom now joins other Washington State-based companies such as Starbucks, Amazon, and REI.
The parents of Rutgers University student Tyler Clemente, who in 2010 committed suicide after roommate Jaron Ravi used a webcam to spy on him and a male lover, have decided not to sue anyone. Joseph and Jane Clemente will instead focus their attention on the Tyler Clemente Foundation. Previously, they had indicated they would sue the university for failing to try to stop the suicide.
The National Center for Transgender Equality has also launched the Transgender On-Campus Non-Discrimination Information Project, called TONI, the nation's first online hub for trans students to share trans-affirmative college policies and practices and exchange ideas for organizing and action. Key features of the site include a searchable database of campus profiles, documenting areas such as housing, records, documentation, healthcare, safety, and curricula. For more, see transstudents.org.
Eagle Scout Matthew Kimball and Scouts for Equality founder Zach Walls have started a nationwide movement of Boy Scouts willing to give up their Eagle Scout pins in support of an ousted Boy Scout from California. Ryan Anderson was told just days before his 18th birthday that he'd be denied his Eagle Scout status because he came out as openly gay during efforts to fight bullying. Now, Eagle Scouts are submitting their Eagle pins to the organization Scouts for Equality.
A group of 63 former Catholic priests are declaring their support for Referendum 74, which would make Washington the seventh state to back same-sex marriage. They will take issue with the state's four Roman Catholic bishops who are campaigning against marriage equality with letters, statements, and videos. The former priests are all married and belong to three Seattle parishes.
The top U.S. city to find a sugar daddy in is New York City. A SeekingArrangement.com poll of 256,000 profiles had NYC easily nabbing the top spot, followed by Chicago and Los Angeles. The average gay sugar daddy is now 39 years old, has an annual income of $215,000, and has a net worth of more than $6 million.
Dr. Angela McGaskill, the chief diversity officer at Washington, D.C.'s Gallaudet University, has been placed on paid administrative leave for signing a petition opposing same-sex marriage. The petition was part of an effort to overturn a Maryland law that would allow same-sex couples to marry.
In world news, in Italy, the right wing is criticizing Milan Mayor Giuliano Pisapia for supporting gay rights, including adoption by same-sex couples. Pisapia's new Registro delle Unioni Civili is a sort of civil partnership, valid only locally. The strongest critics of the mayor's move seems to be politicians with the Lega Nord party.
South Africa has become the first country in the world to recognize the rainbow flag as a national symbol. South Africa's Department of Arts and Culture announced the registry of the flag following an application by the South African version of the rainbow flag's designer, Eugene Brockman. South Africa's post-apartheid constitution was the first in the world to ban sexual orientation-based discrimination. In 2006, it became the first African nation to legalize same-sex marriage.
In Brazil, the Attorney General of the state of Rio de Janeiro annulled an anti-discrimination law protecting LGBT people. The law had been on the books for more than 12 years. However, the Attorney General said it had been introduced in an unconstitutional manner. Sergio Cabral, the governor of the state of Rio de Janeiro, has sent a new identical anti-discrimination law for voting in the state's assembly.
Liverpool, England's gay culture festival, Homotopia, has canceled a two-year international arts project in Russia because of fears of homophobic retaliation from St. Petersburg authorities, including the fear of being fined or imprisoned. Earlier this year, the governor of St. Petersburg changed the city's administrative offenses to include the, quote, propaganda of sodomy, lesbianism, bisexuality, and transgenderism to minors.
In entertainment news, Good Morning America meteorologist Sam Champion has come out as gay and is engaged to boyfriend Rubem Robierb. Champion and Robierb met through mutual friends a few years ago in Miami. Born in Brazil, Robierb is a fine arts photographer who shows his work in Miami, Atlanta, and New York City.
Out fashion designer, film director Tom Ford and his partner, journalist Richard Buckley, are proud to announce the birth of their son, Alexander John Buckley Ford, on Sunday, September 23rd. Ford is often credited with turning around Gucci during his 10-year run as creative director of the label. He and Buckley have been together since 1986.
GLAAD has released the annual Where We Are on TV report, a review of scripted LGBT primetime characters in the 2012-13 television season. The number of regular LGBT characters on broadcast networks has risen to the highest ever recorded, while the overall LGBT character count also increased on cable television. LGBT characters account for 4.4% of scripted series regulars in the 2012-13 broadcast television schedule.
Two playwrights who both wrote dramas about Harvard University's anti-gay secret court are headed to an actual court. Tony Speciale, whose work Unnatural Acts was a Drama Desk nominee last year, has filed suit against former friend Stan Richardson over his play Veritas, which ran at the 2010 New York International Fringe Festival. Speciale claims he and Richardson collaborated on Veritas until they had a falling out. The plays address a long-secret 1920 tribunal conducted at Harvard to purge the campus of gay people.
The National Judy Garland Talent Search has launched. In advance of the 75th anniversary of The Wizard of Oz in 2014, the search aims to find one finalist per U.S. state to compete for the national title. State finalists will gather in October 2013 in Aitkin, Minnesota, at the newly restored Aitkin Opera House at Butler's, where Garland performed on stage as part of the Gum Sisters Vaudeville Act in 1925 when she was just 3 years old. The winner will receive $10,000, among other prizes.
The Price is Right has its first male model in the show's history. Boston resident Rob Wilson begins his week-long gig alongside the ladies on October 15th. Initially, hundreds of men showed up for an open call for the position.
Matthew McConaughey may have dazzled viewers with his body in the male stripper movie Magic Mike, but his latest look has shocked some onlookers. The actor has lost 30 pounds for his upcoming role in the Dallas Buyers Club, the true story of a man with AIDS in the mid-1980s who seeks out experimental HIV drugs to prolong his life.
Cabaret, Bob Fosse's Oscar-winning musical starring Liza Minnelli and Joel Grey, celebrates its 40th anniversary with a Blu-ray debut on February 5th, 2013. Winner of 8 Academy Awards, the film will be offered in a premium Blu-ray book format with 40 pages of photos and text, and special features include Grey and Minnelli recalling aspects of filming.
And Madonna has reportedly taped a full episode of Ellen DeGeneres' talk show that will air on October 29th. Moreover, the musical icon was wearing her MDNA Tour Vogue outfit during the interview and at some point interacts with Sean Sperling, the gay Chicago attorney whose early 90s video of a Madonna-themed bar mitzvah went viral. And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Hi, this is Jason Moore, the director of Avenue Q, and you're listening to the Windy City Queercast.
Let's go to the movies anyway and see.
I'm Richard Knight Jr., and here's your Night at the Movies Minute. For a while there, it looked like Ben Affleck's career was going to fritter away, but a critically acclaimed performance in 2006 Hollywoodland, as the murdered actor George Reeves began his renewal. Then with his assured directorial debut in 2007 with Gone Baby Gone, followed up in 2010 with the expert bank heist movie The Town, there was no doubt that Affleck was not just back in top form as an actor, but as a director as well. Now, with the intensely suspenseful Argo, Affleck continues his hot streak and the early Oscar predictions for the movie are well merited. When the American embassy in Tehran was overtaken during the fall of Iran in 1979, six Americans managed to escape detection, hiding within the nearby Canadian ambassador's private residence. Argo is based on the improbable but true story of Tony Mendez, a CIA consultant, played with deft assurance by Affleck himself, charged with ferreting out the group during the ensuing hostage crisis by his beleaguered boss, played by Bryan Cranston, and getting them safely home. The plan Mendez arrived at, using the making of a Canadian movie to be shot in Iran as the cover story, seemed crazy then and seems crazy now. But knowing the power and lure of the movies, it also makes a perfect kind of sense. The six hostages will be identified as the film's director, production designer, writer, etc., all in Tehran for the purposes of scouting locations, and with any luck, the group will fly to the country after the brief, phony scouting expedition in the city. That was Menendez's hope, and what he got the CIA to agree to. He enlists the help of two old-time Hollywood producers, played with cranky expertise by Alan Arkin and John Goodman, in putting over the scheme. And a dreadfully cheesy sci-fi flick named Argo is chosen as the vehicle. The ticking of the clock is almost palpable as the film draws to its nail-biting conclusion, and in the grand manner of Hitchcock, it all comes down to suspenseful tiny details. Affleck ably juggles these elements and is aided by his terrific cast and Chris Terrio's densely woven script, based on Menendez's memoir and a Wired magazine article. The recreation of the late 70s period is spot on and recalls movie thrillers from the same decade, especially Dog Day Afternoon. Argo is an enthralling and deliciously entertaining movie, ramped up a little bit at the end, of course, and it's a deserved triumph for its star and director. I'm Richard Knight Jr., and that's your Night at the Movies Very Long Minutes.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Weird.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of October 15th, 2012, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. Celebrate a legendary moment as Giordano's Dance Chicago soars into their 50th anniversary season. This dazzling engagement at the Harris Theater includes a powerful world premiere and popular favorites, including the return of the smash hit Jolt. Don't miss this performance by the award-winning company Dance Magazine recently hailed as a burst of pure dance joy that left the audience breathless and ready for more. October 26th and 27th for tickets. Visit harristheaterchicago.org.
The Indigo Girls are coming to the Paramount in Aurora for a rare full band concert. Join Emily and Amy for a rockin' night of music stories and unforgettable moments, all in the acoustically perfect Paramount Theater. One night only, November 3rd. For tickets, visit ParamountAurora.com. That's ParamountAurora.com.
This fall, go inside the mind of a lover, a madman, a poet, a genius, a killer, and a king. Don't miss Hamlet, now playing at Writers Theater in Glencoe, just minutes from downtown Chicago on the Edens or the Metro. For tickets, visit writerstheater.org. Shakespeare's most famous play, combined with an all-star Chicago cast, makes this Hamlet the must-see play of the fall.
Olivia Newton-John is coming to the Paramount in Aurora one night only. Sing along to the hits you love, like Xanadu, Let Me Be There, and of course, Physical. This is her only Chicago area appearance, one night only, November 10th. For tickets, visit ParamountAurora.com. That's ParamountAurora.com.
Chicago Shakespeare Theater, the award-winning theater that brought you last season's Follies, the number one show of 2011 by the Chicago Tribune, presents Stephen Sondheim's Sunday in the Park with George, a soaring musical about a painter's struggle between creating art and living life. For tickets, visit chicagoshakes.com/Sunday, playing now through November 4th. And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Hello, Deb Pierce here, letting you know that we'd love to hear back from you. So go ahead. You know you want to. Post a comment.
A long drink of water in a pickup truck on a bone dry summer. I've been out of luck. When you blew into town, I felt the winds of change. A little bit scary and a little bit strange. I know from being broken harder than nothing to lose. Doesn't take much around here to make such big news. And I'm gone. Mama left a warning from the old front porch, but I'm gone. They say you burn me like a Sherman with your big bad torch.
more than two decades, the Indigo Girls have been giving us music that energizes us and moves us. Often, we're just moved to sing along, word for word. Their music just feels so deeply personal and intimate. And they've become iconic as singer-songwriters, folk rock musicians, and openly gay artists. And now, the Grammy Award-winning Indigo Girls are on tour again, promoting their 14th studio album, Beauty Queen Sister. And I'm thrilled to have Emily on the show again with me. How are you, Emily?
I'm good, Amy. How you doing?
I'm great. So a lot has changed and then continues to be the same in the good way since you and I talked, I think, in 2009. But I want to go back because I think this is so compelling. Possibly, when I was writing my intro, that more than two decades, I found it compelling because I remember hearing you both. I'm from East Tennessee, and I remember hearing you both in about 87 or 88. It was one of my first trips to Atlanta by myself with a friend. In Little Five Points. And
right.
Do you even remember your first gig with Amy? I mean, what was it and what did it look like?
Our first gig was for our English class in high school. That was our first official performance together, and we've been going over to Amy's house to her basement and just learning songs, and we had an English teacher who was very encouraging, and that was it. And then we got fake IDs and then we started playing in local bars and one thing led to another, but that was in 1980, so that's how long we've been playing together.
Wow. Wow. And thank God for inspiring teachers, right, who encourage
you
to think outside the box, because what a spark. Does that teacher know that she's the spark that started it all?
It's actually he does know. His name is Ellis Lloyd, and we named our first sort of homemade record label after him, called Jealous Records, J-E-L-L-I-S, and so he knows, and you're right, he was a pivotal figure in our growth through his encouragement, and everybody needs that.
Boy, that's a big endorsement for arts in schools, and especially with what we've been having here in Chicago with all the public schools and the public school teacher strike and everything. I did not know that story, so I love it when I hear new things from people I've interviewed time and time again. You're on a new tour, and you have embarked on a new adventure for both of you. I mean, if we talk about singing in your classroom, in your English classroom, in Georgia in 80, and then and all the little gigs and all the little clubs and all the outdoor venues and all the big, you know, touring that you've done, this adventure singing alongside symphonies in many of these cities from Dallas to Seattle. What has that experience brought to you and Amy, to your music and also to the experience of performing live with that much sound and that many instruments on stage?
Well, it may have been, I mean, Amy and I worked really, really hard. It's been challenging in that it's a completely new way of performing because you've got this big live thing behind you and, you know, they're not used to playing to a click track, and we've never played with them before, and you have one rehearsal, and then you have the show, and it's a completely different world. You know, they work on a clock, the union clock, and when rehearsal time is over, it is over, no matter if you're having an issue with a song or not. So it's just been, those kind of things have been interesting and challenging, and then getting relaxed with just sort of, because, you know, it is sort of amorphous in a way, and it's dramatic. And they're like in Dallas, we stopped the orchestra three times. I missed a couple of intros. You know, I got lost in the intro to Ghost and missed my cue. And, you know, one time Amy Amanda wasn't on. So just like little logistical things have been learning experiences. But it has been amazing because a challenge is good all these years later, and then it's so beautiful, and the arrangements are really, really good, and the fans have really been loving it. So, you know, after all these years, to finally get to do something completely new has been really inspiring for both of us. We love it. We love playing the symphonies.
It's interesting because the way you describe it, it creates such a structure, right? That I think folk and rock and jazz, I mean, musicians in general, folk, rock, jazz, You know, if you're feeling it and the audience is feeling it and you all have been performing for decades together, you kind of know when we're going to riff or we're going to go off on something. And so it sounds like it does create a structure. But I would imagine when you hit that sweet spot of being able just to fall back into that lushness, it's got to be almost indescribable, I would think.
Is indescribable. I think that everybody's feeling it. You know, when you do fall in that sweet spot, and the audience definitely feels it. Amy and I feel it. The conductor feels it. You know, it's just, I'm assuming the players feel it, although who knows? They're just looking at their charts, you know, so. But we've had a lot of great feedback from the players, from the different orchestras. So it really is incredible. It's otherworldly. We've never experienced it before.
Well, and I bet that there are some of those classical musicians who are fans of yours, but obviously they're in a different genre. So what a wonderful opportunity for them as well. I'm sure there is mutual give and take and respect there. How did the idea even come about? I mean, you know, Sting just did it. Now you guys are doing it. More and more people are who have really an enormous canon of work and are really accomplished singer-songwriters have risked this kind of venture. So how did it come about for you all?
Well, we had it on our radar for a long time because I'm a big Nancy Griffith fan, and she did it with the Blue Moon Orchestra. And so I remember knowing her music without an orchestra and hearing her music with an orchestra and going, wow, this is an incredible fit, and it's just a completely different incarnation of her great music. And and years and years and years went by, and then, you know, we're friends with Brandi Carlile, and she did it with the orchestra, and which is cool.
Yeah, in Seattle, right?
Yep, exactly. And then CAMI, C-A-M-I, the agency that puts the artists together with the symphonies, approached us. And it was just the right time. Both Amy and I were into it. We hired two different arrangers, to Stephen Barber and John Mills, who worked together. They arranged my songs. Then Sean O'Loughlin arranged Amy's songs. And, you know, we just put it all together. And that's how it happened. And now, you know, orchestras suffering a lot financially, different ones. And it's a risk for them, you know. They have to fork out some extra money and hopefully have a good turnout. But apparently these shows are doing quite well. And I know for us, there's a real buzz about it. And that's how it happened, though. Just,
how amazing.
We knew it could be done. We had a friend who did it, a couple of friends. And we got approached by the agency that makes it happen, hired the right people to arrange the music, and worked our butts off learning it. I swear we practiced like hours and hours every day and freaked out and nervous fits and all that. And it was great.
It's good to be new again, right? I mean, that's kind of fun.
No kidding. I mean, it was after the first one we did was in Chattanooga, and we just kind of like, after the show, we're both so nervous, you know, because you can't believe that when you have one rehearsal and you're making mistakes in rehearsal, you can't believe that the show's going to come off.
Right.
And when it does, I think we like gave each other like maybe the first high five we have in 25 years. So we don't high five each other. we were just like, hell yeah, we did it.
Probably had some friends in Chattanooga who were there. I believe I did, because I know you all kicked it off there. So now, this is your 14th studio album. You have amassed a number of live albums. Is there the possibility, I know we're going to talk about the new studio album, but is there the possibility that with the symphony, this might be a live album as well coming
it's
up?
It's in the talks right now. We Good. Just had a team meeting yesterday, and we started talking about that, and now it's just a matter of putting it together. We'd love to do a record. We just picked the time, the symphony, the what we want on it, logistics, all that kind of thing. But I believe it is going to happen.
Oh, well, I hope I can fly wherever it is and be there while you record that. That would be fantastic.
Well, you'll get to hear a stop and start a million times. So
I love it. But
keep it up with that. Yeah.
But that's the humanity of it all. I love that. I mean, otherwise sit in your house and don't have the live experience. I love the live experience, live theater, live music. That's what it's about. This is your new CD, the fourth on your own label, IG Recordings. This new CD, Beauty Queen Sister. How has the aspect of having your own label impacted the process you and Amy have now in producing these CDs? And how does it impact you as an artist? So as producers and as artists, what are the different impacts of having your own label?
First and foremost, it is nice to just have it all in-house. You know, it's nice to not have middle people. We had a good long relationship with Epic Records, and, you know, they did right by us, and that ran its course, and Hollywood Records, you know, just didn't pan out. And I think we were both at that point then chomping at the bit to be completely independent. We had established all the relationships we needed to continue our career, like management, agency, promoters, radio, all those kind of relationships that we've established over 20 years. So it wasn't like we were a brand new band starting out independently. We did that, you know, in the mid-80s. So it was coming full circle, but having all sort of like the machinery, knowing how to work that. And then, you know, we keep a real tight eye on the budgets. There's no money that's wasted. Nothing is frivolously spent. And it keeps us mindful of what things cost and how to be responsible with money and big projects. And, you know, how people have to cut us a break now because we don't have the budgets we used to. All that stuff is good, you know, like learning experience. And then I think we're more productive now than we ever have been. We can put out anything we want, anytime we want. And I think it's really given us a shot in the arm, kept us inspired, and it's been nothing but awesome to be independent.
Cool.
There's nothing. Now, we're distributed by Vanguard Records, and we have a great relationship with them. So I have to say, you know, they are a label, but they've been a great partner for us. And there's just nothing that a major label could do for us anymore.
Yeah. Well, tell
me. It's been very liberating and inspiring.
Liberating and inspiring. Well, that's what an artist needs, right? I mean, all the other stuff is business, and that often can strangle and just take the light out of a lot of artists. So it seems like you entered into it at exactly, I mean, with exactly the right foundation for it to really liberate your art.
Yeah, it's hard for bands out there. You know, like we've known horror stories over the years of bands getting signed and all psyched about that, and then the label holds their record back or something falls through, and then they're, you know, practically destroyed at that point. Or else, we know how hard it is to even get a gig now if you're a working band and you practically have to play a club, pay a club to play there. And if you have kids, forget about it. It's just so hard. So we are fortunate, knowing the, you know, what it's like out there, to be able to maintain a career. It's just, we're very, very fortunate. All the timing and everything that's happened has been, it's just worked well for us.
Well, and I know that you all have individually and collectively mentored so many artists and toured with artists, and you're touring with the Shadow Boxers, an Atlanta band, Atlanta group. And that's always been really an important part of your mission, and I really respect that as well.
Well, we get more from them than they get from us, I'll tell you that. I mean, we do it selfishly, to be honest with you. The Shadowboxers, they're an incredible band, and we're just so jazzed up to be playing with them. And they're great guys, and they're going to have a brilliant career. They're just starting out, and so we're just fortunate to be joining forces with them. And they keep us young, and they keep us inspired. And it's the same way whenever we, I mean, people think that we mentor young artists, but we love having them around. Like, it's just, we like singing with other artists. We like hanging around with them. We like knowing, you know, who's doing what in music and who's exciting and who's inspiring. And so, quite selfishly, we just sort of, you know, bring people into the fold. And we love it. It's like being a bar band for the rest of our career.
So you've mentioned it. Who are the artists right now that you're listening to that would be on your iPod or in your car, and who's inspiring you right now, who you think is just really doing something new and exciting or that you like?
Well, the Bell Brigade, their record last year was probably my favorite record of the year. I found them very inspiring. I bought Cat Power's new record, which I love. I like a lot of straight up stuff too, like Mary J. Blige and Beyonce are two of my favorite performers. They always inspire me because of their soulfulness and their voices. And
I was just in a big conversation about Beyonce last night with my co-host Mitchell Fain, who has said that Beyonce 4.0 is, he thinks, one of the most genius albums of all time. Like,
it's
he said,
incredible.
What's happened with Beyonce, and I'm stealing his thunder because he'll be on the show next week and I'll have said this already, but he said what he thinks has happened with Beyonce is that while we were all writing her off, you know, and thinking she just had, a couple of good pop hits, she's actually become a pretty formidable artist. You know, just really hitting the sweet spot of what's going on musically, that all, you know, that she does release these songs that become anthems, really.
She is a formidable artist. Her voice is a force of nature.
That's what he said. He said she's singing her face off in this new CD. That was his word.
I mean, when I listen to a track and I get goosebumps all over my body, I'm like, holy shit, you know, that's Beyonce. And she's cool. I saw her live. And she had an all-women band, which was super cool. And she's just got a great spirit. You know, I don't know her personally, of course, at all. But I've admired her from the beginning. I just think she's got everything going for her. A cool human being, from all I can tell. And a powerhouse singer. And her finger on the pulse of what's happening. And, I mean, I'm in love with her. And Mary J. Blige, both of them.
I love Mary J. as well. Absolutely. So tell me about this new CD, Beauty Queen Sister. I know you both write separately, and then you come together for arrangements and deciding what songs are going to go on this CD, and kind of you put the CD together, but you write separately. So what was really speaking to you? What was the music that... you know, if you want to be so personal, what's going on in your life or what were the topics? Because, you know, in some ways, to me, this new CD, which I've only been able to listen to a few times with the advanced copy, but it harkens back to some just what I would say are tried and true Indigo Girl sounds. And then I feel like you all continue to just expand and explore these new avenues. And we'll talk about some particular songs, but just tell me in general, you know, how was Emily kind of approaching this piece of art as a CD?
Well, the first thing that I want to do and that I work on doing just from me is to write a good song, you know, so just work really hard at that, and now it's much more of a discipline than it ever was when I was a lot younger and I was totally prolific, and now it's more of a craft, and I really have to go, okay, at 10:30 a.m., I'm going up to my studio, and I'm going to sit down and get my guitar, and even if I don't feel like it, I'm going to write, you know, so it's more like that. So it comes from the songs, first and foremost, trying to write good ones, and I don't think musically there's any great departure for me on this record. There's still a lot of sort of pop melodies, and you have like a quiet acoustic love song, like Birthday Song.
I love that song. I love
it's so
that
simple.
Song.
You know, it's so simple. It's really, I was sitting down to write a birthday card, and I was like, holy cow, like, what does anybody ever really write in a birthday card to someone they love? You know, like, what can you say?
Yeah.
And so, you know, as a dreamy songwriter, I just carried on with that. And then there's a song like Able to Sing, which for me is maybe my favorite song of mine on the record because it spoke to so many things that I was thinking about when all those red-winged blackbirds died after July 4th, and just like a portent and mysterious and mystical and heavy and dark and inspiring. And so, you know, that's got a lot, you know, I tend to be verbose anyway. So that's just like, you know, I vomited all over that song, but
I love the song Gone too. I mean, interesting. I mean, I don't know if it's not a departure. I mean, you obviously have had a strong influence of a piano, you know, as a lead instrument on other tracks over the years, but I just found there to be a crispness to that song that I really love. It's an infectious song.
I like that song too. That's my only co-write on this record. And I co-wrote it with Annie Roboff. Annie is a really well-known songwriter. Like, she co-wrote Faith Hill's song, This Kiss, and she's had a lot of different success with different writers, and she's just a great, she could write a killer bridge. She wrote the music for that bridge. And she plays piano. So we started that song musically over 5 years ago. And I just kept it, and then I always liked it, and I pulled it back out, and I sent it to her, and she wrote that bridge and tweaked some chords. And it is a piano-driven song because I wouldn't have written those chords on guitar. No way. They're like bar chords and, you know, in a key I never would have written in, and it just because it came from the piano. So that did take a different direction because of Annie and because she writes on piano. And I love playing that song. It's just so fun.
I also think that there's I love the influence, the Irish or I guess Celtic influence on Amy's song. Is it Damo?
Damo.
Damo. Yeah.
That's written for Damien Dempsey, or written in about Damien Dempsey, who's an Irish singer-songwriter. And John Reynolds, who plays drums on that and produced it, we met John and, like, Claire Kenny, who plays bass, and some of the players, or Sinead O'Connor's band, back when we first played Lilith. And we sort of whisked them away for a while and toured with them for many years. And John's produced or co-produced records of ours, like Come On Now Social. And so Amy had written that song about Damien and sent it to John, and he had Amy's mando part, and then all those authentic players played those parts, sent it back to Nashville, and Trina Shoemaker was able to meld it sonically and mix it, and there it was.
Yeah. Yeah, I felt like it's interesting that you mentioned Nancy Griffith earlier, because it felt like something, too, that I thought, ooh, Nancy joining the stage on that number at some point would be a cool thing. She tends to, she's very popular in Ireland and in those, in those countries. So, was this an easy CD for you all to put together? You said you're writing and producing in a very quickly these days. Did you have a lot of great songs to net down 13 that you really wanted to put on this album?
We did. We had all the songs ready to go. We even had, I think Amy had a couple extra ones, and we did have to do it quickly. We do that because of budgetary constraints.
Yeah.
And but we like working that way now. You know, rather than belaboring things.
Yep.
I like the immediacy of that experience of just going in and doing the leap of faith. And you know, 9 times out of 10, you get the best take within the first few takes.
Right.
And Frank Swart, first time we've ever used him as a bass player. He was incredible. He had a lot of arrangement ideas. We brought back Brady Blade on drums.
Mm-hmm.
And Luke Bula, the violinist, genius, who played all over our holiday record, Holly Happy Days.
Right.
Brought back some of those guys, Victor Krause on stand-up bass, and Jim Brock on percussion, and just... and then we had the Shadow Boxers in to sing some harmony. So, and Lucy Roach sang on a War Rugs and Unable to Sing, and just really fun and quick. And Peter Collins, very expedient producer at the helm. So making a record is never easy. It's it takes a lot of energy and it's draining, but it's also thrilling. And so it wasn't easy, but it was. I don't have the words for it. Just it was a good ride. The whole thing was a good ride.
Now you have a passion for food. You've called yourself. You were an acclaimed foodie, probably before people called themselves foodies, and have been in the restaurant business with Watershed, which was in Decatur, and then Atlanta. What I was telling one of my gay male friends last night when we went to go see Fran Lebowitz, who was here talking last night. And I was saying, he was like, what are you doing tomorrow? I said, you know, I'm interviewing the Indigo Girls. And he was like, oh my gosh, ask them about Top Chef Masters, please, please, please. So you appeared on season 4. You know, most of the gay men I know are so insanely jealous. How was the Top Chef Masters experience and how did that come about?
It was so great. Well, Curtis, first of all, is as nice as you think he would be. And I'm a huge foodie. I've been a foodie, I think, ever since I was born.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember, like, freaking out over Howard Johnson's fried clams when I was a child. And all the different colors of the ice cream and just all that food can be. And so when we got invited to do that show, it was like, holy cow, this is awesome. Like, where did this come from? And we did it, and we filmed it so long ago that we kind of, like, we didn't forget about it, but it wasn't on our radar screen. And then I got so many people who emailed or texted or called saying they saw us on the show. And really, there's been a big shift in food culture in this country, and the Food Network spearheaded it. It's just been a delight for me. Like, I'm a huge fan of, like, Mario Batali and the people who really have a Ina Garten and the people who have a real relationship with food. And I still have my restaurant, the Watershed on Peachtree. We have a new location now on Peachtree here in Atlanta, and it's kicking butt, and I'm so proud of it. And so food everywhere, food for everybody, and it was a thrill to be on the show. It was really fun.
So do you have a place that you'd like to eat and have food when you come to Chicago? Have you even ever eaten at Table 52, which is openly gay Art Smith's restaurant here, who was Oprah's chef?
I have wanted to eat there, but it seems like every time we come to town, we're playing a show, we don't have a day off, and so I can only read about it so far. But when we do have, you know, I've hit some of the biggies in the country, like the French Laundry, of course, and Per Se in New York, and and love to check out new restaurants on the West Coast, like in San Francisco. But if we don't have a day off, then I won't go out on a show day anyway. So if I can only read about it, that's good until I can get there. But I like fancy restaurants and new restaurants, but I also like the best Vietnamese hole-in-the-wall in town kind of restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And we tried to eat at supposed to be some of the best Indian food in North America when we were in Vancouver.
Yep.
And we were going to go at 6 p.m. and it was a 2.5 hour wait.
Oh, so my gosh.
Sometimes logistics can keep you back, but I love food. I love how people get excited about it. I love the beauty of it. I know it's not easy producing food. I know,
the
owner of a restaurant, people don't know how hard chefs and staff work to put food out there, but it kind of gets in your blood, and then it's a beautiful thing.
So one of your friends, Cindy Lauper, is hanging out here in our town for the next month.
We love her.
You were on tour with True Colors with her, and Cindy is a part of the creative team of this new musical headed to Broadway called Kinky Boots, and it'll be running when you all are here. Any possibility you might get to catch a show, and any possibility that that's something that the Indigo Girls would ever want to do, score and create a musical theater piece?
I have thought about that personally. Like, I'm not a big musical aficionado, but I have had sort of this like little spark inside of one day I would love to write, because I like old classic songs, say of the 40s, and musical songs that just kind of stay with you, and they're sort of anthemic and all that kind of stuff I like. So I have, but I've never explored it. So that's not out of the realm of possibility. And I love writing music for film. I've written some music for short films that friends of mine have done that have been in festivals and stuff. So we unfortunately won't get to see Cindy's show. Again, we don't have a day off. But big love to Cindy Lauper, because we're huge fans.
She is amazing. Well, the Indigo Girls are on tour across the United States, from New York to North Carolina, Pennsylvania to Ohio to Indiana. If you'd like more on their tour, visit indigogirls.com. And if you're in the Chicago area, they're performing one night only with the special guest, the Shadow Boxers, Saturday, November 3rd at 8 o'clock at the Paramount Theater. It's the beautiful Paramount Theater, 23 East Galena Boulevard in downtown Aurora. For tickets and information, go to ParamountAurora.com, or you can call 630-896-6666. We'll have all that information and both those websites on our show notes linked. Emily, thanks so much, and we will see you in Chicago here very soon.
Thanks, Amy. Now I'm going to hang up and go think about food.
Go think about food. I'll do the same.
Okay. Take care.
Bye-bye. Got something to say? Call us today. 312-21-BE-GAY. Well, everyone, it is crisp. Start donning your gay apparel on your front porches for Halloween. Start planning those costumes. I know Night of 100 is happening at Sidetrack and so many other fun things up and down Halsted. If you did not get to go see the Legacy Walk, take a stroll on one of these beautiful, sunny, crisp days up and down Halsted Street in Boys Town. If you're in Chicago, check out the Legacy Walk, Legacy Project. And I hope you all have a great, great week. Bye. Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next QueerCast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City QueerCast. Queer and now.